beloved in the hearts of Jesus and Mary. In the Gospel of St. Matthew, we read how St. John the Baptist told the Pharisees and Sadducees, who claimed to have Abraham as their father, that God is able out of these stones to raise up children to Abraham. And in the Gospel of St. Luke, we find our Lord telling the Pharisees on the first Palm Sunday that if his disciples should stop singing his praises, that the stones will cry out. In the book of Ezekiel the prophet, we come upon that well-known miracle of the dry bones in the desert coming to life by the power of God, so that suddenly the vast multitude of bones became an exceeding great army of living men, with their once dry bones now covered with living human flesh and skin. And in the book of Numbers, near the beginning of the Bible, there is a story of Balaam's donkey speaking with the voice of a human being, complaining because it was being beaten by its master. Its stones and dry bones and donkeys present no difficulties to the infinite power of God. Whenever he wishes to make them perform, then why should a dumb ox be any problem to him if he should wish to transform that ox into an angelic doctor, or a prince of theologians, or a patron of all Catholic schools and scholars? Though St. Thomas Aquinas was dubbed the dumb Sicilian ox by his fellow students and by the teachers during his seminary days, before he was as yet a priest, he was anything but dumb, and he was not an ox, even though he was built strong as an ox. God endowed him with an exceptionally brilliant mind, so that he ranks at the top with the greatest minds that have ever illumined the church with their God-given wisdom. And yet, great as this may be, especially in the eyes of the world, which makes so much of a brilliant mind, the greatest glory of St. Thomas Aquinas is his sanctity, which united him intimately with God and filled him with God's grace. To us, he is not merely Thomas Aquinas, or simply Aquinas. He is St. Thomas Aquinas. We will get back to the dumb ox incident in its proper place, but we must first go back to the beginning and see the work of God as it developed in the life of St. Thomas Aquinas. It was the good pleasure of God that Thomas Aquinas, who was eventually blessed with the nobility of the saints, should also belong to the nobility of this world. His father, Landulf d'Aquino, was a noble knight, and he was known as the Lord of Rocca Secca, and his mother was Lady Theodora. His father's family came from Lombardy in northern Italy, while the original Lombards, after whom Lombardy is named, were a Teutonic people who came down from what eventually became known as Germany. Lady Theodora, on the other hand, was of Norman origin, which means that her people came to Italy from that part of France known as Normandy, a large area to the west of Paris, while the original Normans were Norsemen who came down from Scandinavia. The word Norman is nothing but a shortened form for Norsemen, or men of the north. All this shows us what kind of blood was in the veins of Thomas Aquinas. But what is more, his family lived in that part of Italy which in those days belonged to the kingdom of Sicily. So here we have a combination of a Teuton, a Norseman, and Sicilian, and Italian. Aquino, the town after which Thomas Aquinas is named, is located about halfway between Rome and Naples, with Naples being about 145 miles southeast of Rome. In Latin, the word Aquinas was coined, pronounced, of course, Aquinas in English. and it means a person who belongs to or comes from the town of Aquino. In English, we sometimes find the word Aquin for Aquino. Thomas of Aquin is Thomas of Aquino, or Thomas Aquinas. Aquino is only a few miles to the west of the world-famous Monte Cassino Benedictine Abbey, while the Rocca Secca Castle of the Aquinas family is a few miles north of Aquino. The Italian form of the castle's name is Rocca Secca, spelled as one word, while the partially Latinized form is Rocca Sicca, spelled as two words. The word Rocca Secca means a dry rock or a dry rocky hill. The Aquinas castle was built on a dry rocky hill called Rocca Secca, and the father of the family, as we have noted, was called the Lord of Rocca Secca. As far as historians have been able to determine, there were at least four boys and four girls in the Aquinas family. The youngest boy was named Tommaso, or Thomas, the future St. Thomas Aquinas. Tommaso in Latin, which became Tommaso in Italian, which became Thomas in Latin, and in English we simply took the Latin word and pronounced it our own way, Thomas. The exact date of his birth in the Rocca Secca castle is not known, though the year is generally believed to have been 1225, which would mean that St. Thomas Aquinas was born the year before St. Francis of Assisi died. Even critical biographers who try their best to distinguish between fact and fiction in the lives of the saints like to tell of an apparently insignificant incident that occurred in Naples when Thomas Aquinas was hardly more than a baby. His mother was about to give him a bath when he picked up a piece of paper from the floor and held it tightly in his hand. His mother tried to get it out of his hand, but he wouldn't let go. So she washed him as is, with the paper tightly clutched in his hand. It turned out that on that little piece of paper were written the two words, Ave Maria. After Thomas Aquinas had acquired his fame as a saint and as a great writer and teacher, it was not difficult to see the prophetic nature of this incident. It was said to have foretold his future great devotion to the Blessed Virgin Mary, even though he was mistaken about the Immaculate Conception, and it also foretold his future as a great writer, and also the fact that he held on to his convictions most tenaciously and would not let go of them. Another incident in his childhood days reveals to us the reason why St. Thomas Aquinas is considered a patron against lightning. The Rocca Secca Castle, like so many other castles, had a number of towers, though one of the towers was higher than the rest. One day, during a terrible thunderstorm, a mighty bolt of lightning hit the tallest tower of the castle and penetrated all the way down to the bottom, where at the lowest level of the tower was the stable for the horses. The lightning killed the horses, but at a higher level in the tower, where the family living quarters were located, one of the little sisters of the saint was also killed, while he himself was unhurt, though he was near her and was sleeping peacefully. As is common with noble families, the Aquinas family was proud of its position and sought its advancement in whatever legitimate way they could. They hoped to have one of the sons become a Benedictine monk at Monte Cassino in the hope that someday he would become the abbot there. The youngest son, Thomas, had already showed signs of being inclined toward the things of God in his early childhood days, So he was sent to the nearby Monte Cassino Abbey Elementary School at the age of 5 to receive his elementary education there together with the sons of other noble families. The Rocca Secca Castle, it is interesting to note, had been founded and built under the direction of one of the Monte Cassino abbots. So it was considered right that someone born at the castle should join the monks at the abbey. Rule of St. Benedict made it possible for young boys to become what are called oblates of St. Benedict while living at the abbey and receiving their schooling and training there. It was expected that some of them, at least, would eventually become Benedictine monks. Thomas Aquinas was at the Monte Cassino Abbey School for about 8 years, or until the age of 14. During those 8 years, he grew physically, but also and especially he grew in wisdom and in the grace of God. Though there is no record of it, he probably received his first communion at the abbey. As a student, the boy stumped his teachers by asking not who is God, but what is God, which indicates that he wanted to know the very nature of God. Because the young Thomas Aquinas showed brilliant intellectual abilities during his schooling at the Monte Cassino Abbey, the abbot recommended to his father that he be sent somewhere where he would have opportunities for further and higher studies. But there was another reason why Thomas Aquinas left, or rather was taken by his father from Monte Cassino Abbey. It was a time of great political unrest, with the main storm being between Pope Gregory IX and Frederick II, Emperor of Germany and Italy, and King of Sicily. When the Pope excommunicated the Emperor, the Imperial troops barged into the Monte Cassino Abbey and drove the monks out. Only Thomas Aquinas had left just before the storm broke. The abbey was like a den of thieves for about 20 years after that. He then went to the newly founded University of Naples, about 70 miles or so to the southeast, to continue his studies there as an undergraduate student. During his 4 years there, from 1239 to 1243, he became acquainted with the Dominicans, whose order had been founded in 1216 by St. Dominic. In the order of St. Dominic, officially called the Order of Preachers with the initials O.P., young Thomas Aquinas found his heart's desire, for it was established by St. Dominic as an apostolic order intended to save souls through preaching and teaching, for both of which he had superb talents. Without having obtained his parents' consent beforehand, Thomas Aquinas received the Dominican habit sometime in 1243 or early in 1244, when he was about 18 or 19 years old. In the eyes of his family, this was a terrible mistake and a shameful humiliation that one of the nobility or aristocracy should lower himself so much as to enter one of these new religious orders called mendicant orders. They were called mendicants because they lived on begging and free will offerings, and not by ecclesiastical positions that would assure them a good lifelong salary and comfortable living. The Franciscan order, also a mendicant order, had been instituted by St. Francis of Assisi in 1209. Thomas Aquinas had already acquired quite a reputation as a brilliant student, and now, in the eyes of everyone, he recklessly threw away all hopes of a distinguished university career. But how mistaken they were. This and the fact that he was an aristocrat meant everything to those who knew him, They could not understand why he should go hide himself in the despised mendicant order. The Dominican fathers in Naples feared some kind of outbreak, especially on the part of the aristocracy. They remembered all too well how a few years earlier, in the year 1235, they had been attacked by an armed band hired by a certain noble family that resented one of their own becoming a Dominican. They knew they had better get Thomas Aquinas out of Naples fast, even though he was still in the novitiate. Though Thomas himself would not give up his Dominican vocation for anything, the Dominican fathers did not want to lose such an outstanding new member, not just brilliant intellectually, but especially so virtuous and so holy. They decided to take him to Rome first, and then on to Paris. As soon as Lady Theodora d'Aquino received the news that her son, Thomas, had become a lowly Dominican, she was up in arms. Despite her otherwise virtuous qualities, family prestige was foremost in her mind. She hurried off to Naples to get him out of the Dominican order, but he had already left for Rome. She then took off in haste for Rome, only to find out at the Dominican church of Santa Sabina that Friar Thomas had just left and was on his way north, headed for Paris. In desperation, Lady Theodora quickly sent word to her three older boys, James, Ronald, and Landolph Jr., who were all in military service, to come and help her head off their youngest brother. However, they managed to do it, and so fast, they nevertheless did it, with the help of other soldiers or knights, and even with the personal permission of the emperor himself. Friar Thomas, in the company of four other Dominican friars, was found resting near a fountain or spring by the roadside. It was early in May, in the year 1244. Besides trying to talk him out of the Dominican order, Thomas's brothers also tried to rip off his Dominican habit, but they could not cope with his great physical strength. They had him shut up in one castle closer to Rome at first, but then they took him to the home castle of Rocca Secca, where he lived like a prisoner for about 2 years. In the meantime, they did finally manage to rip off his Dominican habit from him. His mother, Lady Theodora, tried various feminine tricks to shake him loose from his Dominican vocation, in one case using the oldest of his four sisters to talk him out of the Dominican order. But the result was that Thomas talked her into the religious life, and she eventually became an abbess. Thomas held on to his Dominican vocation as tenaciously as he had held on to that little piece of paper with Ave Maria written on it when a little child. But the most ignoble thing of all that happened during Friar Thomas's imprisonment was the fact that his brothers sent a girl into his room one day with the hope that he would fall for her charms. The girl met the surprise of her life when Thomas grabbed hold of a burning piece of wood from the fireplace and charged towards her angrily. She fled. Friar Thomas is said to have traced a large cross on the wall or on the door with the burning wood, and then he fell down and prayed, and finally fell asleep. He had a beautiful dream in which two angels came to him and girded him with a cord, saying, "On God's behalf we gird you with a cord of chastity, which no attack will ever destroy." Some concluded from this that Thomas never experienced temptations against chastity, but the angels' words do not necessarily mean this. This incident is one of the reasons why Thomas Aquinas earned the title of Angelic Doctor. Other reasons were the fact that he seemed to have the mind of an angel. whom because of his innocent way of life, he, as it were, lived with the angels. He is honored as a patron of purity or chastity. Eventually, the Aquinas family gave in to Thomas's iron will and determination to remain a Dominican. And he either escaped, as one story has it, or was simply left free to go. Friar Thomas went to Naples for a while, but his superior soon sent him on to Rome and then to Cologne in Germany. In Cologne, the big attraction at the Holy Cross Dominican House of Studies was Albert the Great, now one of the over 30 doctors of the Church and a saint, who was considered to excel in all branches of knowledge, with natural sciences being his chief specialty. He is a patron of natural sciences. Students from various parts of Europe came to Cologne to study under Albert, who eventually became an archbishop. Thomas Aquinas was fascinated by the teaching of Albert the Great, whose close friend he eventually became. But he kept quiet, and for a time no one knew what a brilliant mind he possessed. His fellow students, knowing that he was from the kingdom of Sicily, and seeing his husky build, while noticing his reticence, concluded that he just didn't know anything. So they began to call him a dumb Sicilian ox. One big-hearted student even thought he would try to help out this apparently slow-witted friar by tutoring him privately. And Thomas, possibly with a chuckle up his sleeve, accepted the charitable offer. In no time, the self-appointed master came upon a difficult question that he could not solve. So Thomas Aquinas quietly explained everything to him in the clearest terms. The dumbfounded would-be master then begged Thomas to do the tutoring from then on, and so the master and the disciple changed places. St. Albert the Great first took notice of Thomas Aquinas' extraordinary intellectual talents when a paper written by him came into his hands. He called Friar Thomas into his private study and questioned him on many difficult matters, only to find out that he had a genius before him. It was customary in those days to have classroom debates, or scholastic disputations as they were then called. And today maybe they would be called dialogues or something like that. St. Albert, the professor, decided to debate Thomas, his student, himself. Friar Thomas did so well in this debate that Albert the Great was completely overcome with admiration for him. And then he suddenly exclaimed, as with the voice of a prophet, "We call him the dumb ox, but the bellowing of that ox when he comes to teach will resound throughout the whole world." To this, St. Albert could have added the phrase, "for all times to come." Even in our times, when so much of great value has been rejected within the Church, including the teachings of St. Thomas Aquinas in some quarters, we can only say that the greatness and glory of St. Thomas Aquinas still lives and will live forever. Friar Thomas Aquinas was probably ordained a priest of God while still in Cologne. There are no precise records on this particular point, but the decree of canonization of St. Thomas Aquinas states that he made such progress both in knowledge and in the things of the Spirit, that he was raised to the priesthood while he was still young. Sometime in the year 1252, when he was 27 years old, Father Thomas Aquinas went to Paris for further studies, with the result that he eventually received the degree of Master of Sacred Theology and was awarded a professor's chair at the famed University of Paris. Unfortunately, hostility towards the mendicant religious orders existed also at the university, one reason being that they had too many brilliant men and were attracting too many followers. For a time, the opponents of the friars, especially opponents of the Dominicans and the Franciscans, succeeded in having the Holy See withdraw from them the privilege of teaching at the university. But eventually, the rights of the Dominicans and Franciscans were restored to them, and they were allowed to teach. Thomas Aquinas was in the middle of this unfortunate struggle, which lasted for about 20 years. But in 1256, the Pope, Alexander IV, expressly declared his right to teach publicly and to preach. Father Thomas Aquinas, often referred to as Master Thomas Aquinas during his teaching career, remained in Paris for about 8 years altogether, or until the year 1259, when he was transferred to his native Italy, where he continued his teaching and preaching at various places for nearly 10 years. And it was then that some of his greatest writings were completed, or at least begun. During a part of these years, that is, between 1261 and 1265, he taught in the School of Theology and Philosophy connected with the papal court of Pope Urban IV. This mention of Pope Urban IV brings us to one of the great glories of St. Thomas Aquinas, and that is his contribution to devotion to the Holy Eucharist, which earned for him such titles as the Doctor of the Holy Eucharist and the Poet of the Holy Eucharist. In 1264, Pope Urban IV decreed to institute the Feast of Corpus Christi, which has for centuries been celebrated on the Thursday after the Feast of the Holy Trinity. He asked Thomas Aquinas to compose the text for the feast. This included the complete divine office and mass for the feast, with special Eucharistic hymns. The saint gave us, first of all, the Laudation Salvatorum, a hymn known as a sequence to be sung after the epistle of the Mass of Corpus Christi, which in English goes by the title of Praise the Sion, Praise Thy Savior. Then there is the very well-known Pange Lingua Gloriosi in 6 stanzas, which we have in English under the title of Sing My Tongue the Savior's Glory. The last 2 stanzas of the Pange Lingua are the famous Tantum Ergo, traditionally sung at benediction with the Blessed Sacrament, which in English is Down in Adoration Falling. A third Eucharistic hymn composed by St. Thomas Aquinas is the Fanius Angelicus, which goes by the English title, The Very Angel's Bread. Fanius Angelicus is really stanzas 6 and 7 of a longer hymn not known to the ordinary person, Sacris Solemnius, that is, Sacred Solemnities, referring to the solemnities of the Feast of Corpus Christi. The O Sanitaris, O Saving Victim, so well known to us, is the 4th Eucharistic hymn of St. Thomas Aquinas. It takes up stanzas 5 and 6 of another not too well known hymn, the Verbum Supernum Prodeans, that is, the supernal word proceeding, which refers to the eternal Word of God coming forth into this world to become man. The 5th Eucharistic hymn of St. Thomas Aquinas is the better known Adoro Te Devote in 7 stanzas in the original, which comes under 2 titles in English, Humbly We Adore Thee and Hidden Godhead Humbly. All these Eucharistic hymns were composed by St. Thomas Aquinas in the year 1264 and while he was in Italy. It was also during this period of his life in Italy that he began the greatest of his works, the famed Summa Theologica, which is a summary of all the teachings of the Catholic faith. It is known, at least by its title, to properly educated Catholics, especially Catholics of pre-renewal days. After about 10 years in Italy, St. Thomas was again transferred, this time to Paris for his second but shorter career as a professor at the university there. Of the incidents that could be mentioned, we wish to tell only of how he was once invited, late in 1269 or early 1270, by King St. Louis IX of France to a royal luncheon. St. Louis and St. Thomas had been good friends already during Aquinas' first stay in Paris as a university professor. St. Thomas begged to be excused because he was so busy writing his Summa Theologica. But an express command, both from his superior and from the king, managed to make the saint leave his work and come to the king's palace. His mind, however, was so occupied with what he had been writing about that he forgot where he was. In the middle of the luncheon, he suddenly banged down on the table with his fist and exclaimed, "That will finish the Manichaean heresy." In those days, the heresy called Albigensianism was drawing people away from God, and it was nothing but a revival of the old Manichaean heresy of the second century, which wrongly maintained, among other wicked things, that there are two supreme beings, a good one and an evil one. The great St. Augustine of the 5th century was, before his conversion, a victim of this heresy. And St. Dominic, with the aid of the Rosary, saved many souls from the newly revived Manichaean Albigensian heresy, which flourished especially in southern France. And now St. Thomas Aquinas was writing as if he were giving the death blow to this old heresy, which really still exists today under various forms and names. The Satanism of today is nothing but a variation of old Manichaeanism. When St. Thomas Aquinas shouted at King St. Louis's table, his superior sitting next to him tugged on his mantle and said, "Remember, Father, that you are at a luncheon with the king." Father Thomas, naturally embarrassed, apologized to the king for his absent-mindedness. But the king was deeply impressed that Thomas Aquinas concentrated so intensely on his work that not even a luncheon with the king could distract him from it. And he ordered that paper and pen be brought to the great master of theology so that he could immediately write down what was going through his mind. Intense concentration and calm and clear thinking are some of the outstanding characteristics of St. Thomas Aquinas, who would never lose his head even in the many debates in which he was so often engaged. And he never did any name-calling, as others did to him. But now we must hurry off to Italy with Thomas Aquinas for the last few years of his life, 1272 to 1274. We find him back in Naples, in southern Italy, on that decisive St. Nicholas Day of 1273, nearly 700 years ago. The saint had many visions during his life, including now near the end of his life, the well-known vision of Christ on the cross, saying to him, "You have written well about me, Thomas. What kind of reward would you like for your labors?" Father Thomas is said to have replied, "Lord, none other but thee." On December the 6th, 1273, St. Thomas went into an ecstasy during Holy Mass. What he saw in this vision caused him to say, "What I have written seems to me like so much straw compared to what I have seen and what has been revealed to me. I have reached the end of my writing, so I hope that the end of my life will come soon. The end of his life was due to come almost exactly 3 months later. His dumbfounded fellow Dominicans tried to persuade him to continue his writings, but he kept saying, "I cannot go on." He had not finished his greatest work, the Summa Theologica. In 1273, he was writing about the sacraments, which are in part 3 of the Summa. He had finished the section on the Holy Eucharist and was now writing about the sacrament of penance, but he never did finish it. Because of his great renown as an outstanding theologian, Thomas Aquinas was invited by Pope Gregory X to take part in the 14th Ecumenical Council, scheduled to begin at Lyons in eastern France in May of 1274. He set out for Lyons around the beginning of February, but he did not get very far. Big and strong as he was, and only 49 years old, Father Thomas had been troubled with several mysterious illnesses within the past year or so. So he stopped at a castle to visit a niece, Lady Frances, about two-thirds of the way up from Naples to Rome. He fell ill and was put to bed. After a few days he said, "If the Lord is coming for me, I had better be found in a religious house rather than in a castle." So he was taken to the Cistercian Abbey of Fossanova, some 50 miles or so southeast of Rome, which he had often visited in his travels. There, on the morning of March the 7th, 1274, a Wednesday, the innocent and angelic soul and the mighty spirit of Master Theologian Thomas Aquinas winged its flight to the eternal embrace of God, whom he had loved all the days of his life. Dominicans, Franciscans, and Cistercians were present at his death. 49 years later, on July 18, 1323, he was canonized by Pope John the 22nd. In 1567, the Dominican Pope St. Pius V declared St. Thomas Aquinas a doctor of the Church with the special title of the Angelic Doctor. In 1880, Pope Leo XIII proclaimed him patron of all Catholic schools. In 1918, Pope Benedict XV ordered that the philosophy and theology shall be taught by the professors in Catholic schools absolutely in accord with the method, doctrine, and principles of the Angelic Doctor. And this was made part of canon law, canon 1366. In debatable matters, where there are differences of opinion, the Church has allowed teachers to follow views of different schools of thought. In 1923, on June 29th, Pope Pius XI issued his encyclical Studiorum Ducem, Guide for Studies, on the occasion of the 600th anniversary of the canonization of St. Thomas Aquinas. He set him up as the ideal guide, especially for those studying for the Catholic priesthood, and he extolled him as the perfect model of a saint and a doctor, one who excels both in holiness and in learning. Near the end of his encyclical, the Holy Father said, "It was said of old to the Egyptians who were in need of corn, 'Go to Joseph.' So to all who hunger for truth, we would say, 'Go to Thomas, for the food of sound doctrine that will sustain the soul unto everlasting life.' May the Lord bless you and give you peace."